The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Three wins from three for England. Is there anything that can stop them? Okay, a Polish team missing their best player and half their midfield almost did, but that is not the point. Is this great resolve from Southgate's men or a team still in progress? And who has made the shirt their own just before the squad is named for the Euros? Also today, should Germany join the Republic of Ireland in pre-qualifying following their defeat to North Macedonia? How is 90-year-old Goran Pandev still playing? And should Barry give Timo Werner some of his Iheanacho treatment to get him out of this big hole? Che Adams scores for Scotland, there's a vital win for Wales and a goalless draw for Northern Ireland. There's another chance to talk about Aidy Boothroyd before we all completely forget about the under-21s for another couple of years. And then the international break will be over and we can get excited about the Premier League weekend before complaining about it next week. All that plus Chelsea into the semi-finals of the Women's Champions League, yet more merch ideas and your cameo suggestions. That plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Natasha Henry, welcome.
Hi, good morning, Max.
Good morning, Ed Ahrens.
Good morning, Max.
And hello, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Max, how are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for asking, Barry. Jon John says, was it easier for the panel to come up with conversation topics during the second month of the initial lockdown than it is 10 days into an international break? Hopefully we've got enough for you, Jon John. We'll see, won't we? Let's start with England 2, Poland 1. Harry Maguire's late winner after John Stones' mistake let Poland in to equalise. Gareth Southgate said, today was a good test for us, a good test in terms of our opponent, but also in terms of our resilience. I thought England were quite good, Natasha, in this game. Like a slightly better final ball a couple of times. It would have been a straightforward victory. I sort of detect it, you know, I sort of woke up this morning and listening to things and reading things that it's sort of some kind of impending disaster. But I thought we did okay yesterday.
Yeah, I think we did okay, but that's the problem with England a lot of the time. I feel like it's just okay. It's just enough. It's, you know, we just the right side of the line. They do a 6 or a 7 out of 10 rather than a 9 out of 10. I think, yeah, they got the result. Obviously, there was no Lewandowski, so life was straight away much easier. I think Mal and Foden did themselves a lot of credit. Kane, I'm still worried about his injuries and obviously going into the last part of the season, how he's going to be for the Euros. But I'd like to see them be a bit more, I don't know, aggressive. I don't know if aggressive is the right word, but definitely more attacking, just more creative across the pitch, I feel like they need to be.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but also I thought they were quite attacking. They just didn't get the final ball right, is what I thought. What do you reckon, Ed?
Yeah, I think that there was some good signs in there, and it's obviously wasn't a vintage performance, but you know this was a massive game for England in the overall picture for qualification. You know, especially because Poland and Hungary have already drawn a game. And it was just vital for them to get that victory. And I think it's pretty harsh for people to criticise too much because, you know, I know they've had a bit of time together, but the most important thing in these situations is to get the victory. And they did that, albeit it was a little bit late. And obviously, you know, Stones made a big mistake, which would have been the last thing that Southgate would have wanted to see. But, yeah, I think we need to just try and, you know, hold our criticism for a little bit and try and be positive. But I know what Tasha's saying as well. I'd actually like to see another attacking player in the mix there. And I think we, again, the midfield is a little bit too pedestrian, and I think that perhaps you could put Mount back into a more defensive role with Rice in the two, and then bring somebody like perhaps Sancho into the team, playing Foden maybe in the midfield. I don't know if that's something he's thought about. But certainly that would automatically give England a lot more attacking quality.
Barry, did you enjoy it?
Not really. it was okay. I mean, England were good in the first half, pretty poor in the second half. Again, relied on set pieces for goals against a team that didn't offer a great deal, really. I think that there's a danger of overanalyzing these games, which, you know, I'm aware we that is what we're doing now, but you know, I have noticed in a lot of the postmortems that people are obsessing over a poor touch from John Stones. You know, it's he made an error. It wasn't particularly catastrophic. You know, it's just he so happens to have a history of making errors and having lapses of concentration. But again, I wouldn't read too much into that. He's had a terrific season. But, is a game like that particularly enjoyable? It was a professional job. England did just enough to win it, and they move on to the next game, which will obviously, the next competitive game anyway, will be at the Euros. But no, I didn't enjoy it. I watched it out of a sense of duty.
Barney said, Raheem Sterling remains the most vital attacking cog in this team, the one figure running with real purpose. Would you agree with that, Natasha?
Yeah, I think I was listening to a commentary last night as well, and Ashley Cole kept mentioning no one's running into space. You know, Sterling's the only one that's seeing an opportunity and hoping that his midfield notice that he's there and there's no one marking him. And yeah, I agree with Ed. It'd be really nice to take the handbrake off. I know it's such a cliche, but you know, we don't need two defensive midfielders against an Albania and teams like that. And it is about getting the result, but we know we're probably going to get the result against these teams. So maybe this is the time to play about with your squad, see who you can bring in, change the formation, rather than just thinking three or four at the back. Let me bring in an extra attacking player. You know, let's go full three at the front and see what happens, because these teams, we're probably going to beat them anyway. So we can take a bit more of a risk than when we're at a tournament. I also agree Stones has got too much grief. He made one mistake, but based on his work this season, that one mistake doesn't take away from how good he's been.
I think the danger, if Southgate does experiment like that, again, people will completely overanalyze it and try to second guess him. And I'm not sure how much, if any, attention he pays to, you know, what is written about his England side in the media. It would be really hard to avoid it. And even if he does avoid it, he knows from press conferences the kind of things that journalists and by extension the public at large are obsessing over. And I just think the level of scrutiny he's put under, like, I mean, he's more accountable than the Prime Minister, you know. And luckily he's got a lot more moral fibre and backbone than the Prime Minister, but he is literally under more scrutiny than the Prime Minister. He has to answer every single decision he makes. He has to answer for it. He can't just bat these things away or ignore questions or hope that a very accommodating press bordering on the level of propagandists are going to give him an easy ride. He's not going to get an easy ride. So I think that could conceivably make him think, oh, look, I'd kind of like to try this, but the amount of grief I'll get if it goes wrong, it just makes it not worthwhile. Because deep down, I know that when push comes to shove, I am going to wear a belt and braces in these important European group games.
Yeah, and it's exactly that kind of pressure, I think, that might make Gareth think about switching back to the three at the back now, which is really something that I would not be in favour of, because it's a cautious approach. And it would be to cover for, you know, a lack of confidence, really, in the two at the back, in the middle, you know, obviously Maguire and Stones. So, and I think...
But you've just told him off for playing the two holding midfield. You know, he's played four at the back, which I agree with you. I think it's better. And I think actually Maguire and Stones is sort of better as a two than any three that we have, because it's only really Cody who plays in a three regularly. But I don't mind having two. And I think Rice and Phillips are both more forward thinking than perhaps, as soon as they're put in that position, you wonder if they suddenly put Mason Mount in that position, he'd do some defensive things, because that's what you have to do when you're there. And then people would start yelling, going, Gareth Southgate has turned Mason Mount into Carlton Palmer, and he should never, you know. I tend to agree with, but I think we all agree, the overanalysis, which, as Barry said, is exactly what we're doing now, it sort of becomes ridiculous.
Well, I mean, maybe he should just adopt the Boris Johnson modus operandi. So when a journalist goes, oh, why didn't you play just one holding midfielder and two attacking midfielders? He could just say, well, I did.
it's tricky, but I mean, if you compare, and we'll talk about the Germany game in a minute, like these teams, I still think there is always this, and we talked about it with the Albania game, and I know Poland were missing Lewandowski and a couple of other players, but they're a good football team. And you know, no international team gets that much time to play together. And so we just sort of presume, there was this weird presumption that England are going to just win every single game that they play in until they get to like the quarterfinals against Germany. And then we go, oh, well, we could win it. And by that time, I've got a St. George's Cross painted on my face and I've lost all sense of reality. But like Poland are, you know, they've got good players. There are good players in that team.
Is it an assumption though, or is it just based on experience? Because I think we're assuming it because that's pretty much how every tournament goes. We walk through the qualifiers, we're okay in the group games, maybe just scrape through, and then comes to the quarters and the semis, England are out. So we're basing that assumption on what we've seen for the past 15, 20 years.
And we haven't lost a qualifier for so long, and we always get through qualifying. That maybe they just shouldn't broadcast the qualifiers. That would help. It just wasn't, if it just came out, we just went, oh, 2-1, seems fine, crack on. Jez says, should penalties no longer count towards Golden Boot awards? Ings would have won the Golden Boot last season if penalties weren't included. It would make Golden Boots at tournaments more exciting and not just who takes the penalties for the biggest teams. Harry Kane has scored 10 penalties for England now. What do you reckon, Ed?
Yeah, I think that's quite a good shout, actually, because it does kind of skew it. I think when he won the Golden Boot in 2018, it was at least 2 penalties in there, wasn't there? So, yeah, I think that's a fair enough shout because you still have to put the ball in the net, but it's a bit of an unfair advantage.
Jeffrey Leopard says, now that fake crowd noise is being used for England and internationals, why do they still insist on keeping fake annoying England band sounds? I muted it and played some classical music and it fitted beautifully. Try it, you won't be disappointed. Yeah, it's quite a good idea, isn't it? Zach says, is England's under-21s being eliminated by a 91st-minute goal after making us all believe the most relevant experience that A.D. Boothroyd has given the youngsters in his tenure? They're out despite winning against Croatia 2-1. They needed to win by 2 clear goals. It was a wonderful goal by Bradaric in injury time. England managed 1 shot on target in the tournament before this game. They failed to advance from the group stage of the European Championship in 5 out of the last 6 competitions. A.D. Boothroyd described his role as an utterly impossible job. Natasha, utterly impossible?
I guess things are utterly impossible when you're not capable of doing them. So maybe that's where he's coming from. It's clearly an impossible job for him. Otherwise, they wouldn't be out of the tournament. I used to love watching the under-21s. Much more than the seniors, and I think this squad.
Did you really?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's the innocence of youth, and they haven't like we the way we overanalyze the senior squad. We don't do that with the under-21s. There's maybe yeah. That's why I enjoy it a bit more. But you look at that squad: Eze, Jones, Smith Rowe, Nketiah, and they could beat a West Brom. You know, there's enough capable players in there that have played for their clubs and shown they can perform against, you know, in the Premier League, but. We're out of the tournament. We've had 1 shot on target before yesterday. It's ridiculous.
I'd happily watch that tournament if Big Sam's West Brom were in it somewhere. Ed, what do you reckon?
Well, I was just going to say there's definitely a better preparation for life as a senior England player that Boothroyd presided over. And that was when of course, we got knocked out in the semi-finals by Germany on penalties in 2017. And I covered that tournament and it was... Actually, they did pretty well there. And it was like, we could have won that. We lost on penalties. Boothroyd deserves another crack. So I was quite excited to see what the next generation was going to do in 2019 and this year as well. Because some really good players. And this squad in particular has got several players that were at the under-17 World Cup and won it a few years ago. And if you remember what, you know, the reaction was in the country when the under-17s won and the under-20s won, I think, was before won their World Cup. I think that, you know, that just shows you how important it can be to focus on youth football. And I think that we should be trying to win the under-21s tournament because it could be a real stepping stone for our young players to make that, to, you know, play in the seniors. But it just seems to be this sort of inconsistent approach with players that some go to the under-21s and some don't. You know, some go straight to the seniors. And if you've been in the seniors, you can't go back to the under-21s. But then for somebody else, it's a completely different, you know, a different idea. So I think we have to look at this really seriously and try and get our best players there because most other countries in Europe, it's a fact that they do target this competition, even if those guys are in the senior squad. So somebody like Jude Bellingham is the perfect example here. Why was he with the senior squad and, you know, coming off the bench against San Marino when he could have been playing with the under-21s and hopefully winning a tournament? I mean, it was really frustrating to see how it all ended as well yesterday. I mean, it was pretty unlucky in the end. At least they put on a decent performance and won the game. But yeah, really, I'm still really disappointed about it.
I mean, it's weird. Listening to Eddie Boothroyd, it seems as if he genuinely believes his job. Well, he said, my job is not to win tournaments. My job is to provide players for the England senior team. And he does seem to honestly believe that if he didn't manage the under-21s or the under-21s didn't exist, England would struggle to get 11 players together for a major tournament, which is absolutely not the case in any way, shape or form. And some of the stuff he's been coming out with over the past couple of days have been utterly delusional. Mm. You know, his importance in the role in the construction of the England senior.
Not just the last couple of weeks, Barry, to be honest. It's been the last 6 years.
But I remember when he was manager of Watford and they were doing quite well, he gave an interview to The Observer. I remember reading it, and he just came across as this very thoughtful, inspirational even figure of a leader. Mm. And I remember I actually bought a couple of books he recommended in that interview. So inspired was I by his rhetoric. And I'm just wondering what happened to that guy, because the Eddie Boothroyd I'm hearing doing press conferences now, it couldn't be more different.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent a bit of time with him in 2017. He was kind of impressive. But then if you look at his later club record after Watford, you know, that good season they got promoted, it's really not good. I mean, he left Northampton when they were bottom of League Two, and that was his last job in club management. And then 2 months later, he was in the England setup. A lot of people say it's because of his relationship with Dan Ashworth, you know, the head of the FA's recruitment and youth. So, yeah, and I hear that he was saying last night he wants to stay on. So, God help us, really. Let's hope that, you know, and Frank Lampard's been mentioned as a potential person to take over.
Jesus.
Which I'm not sure he would be up for that, but yeah, I think it should be somebody from who's in the England coaching setup or works well with young players and has proven to work well with young players.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what Ed said about Eddie Boothroyd saying his job is not to win tournaments, it's to prepare players for the senior squad. I mean, that's just ridiculous. All ex-players tell you that winning mentality that you get from a trophy helps you in your career, helps you for the next tournament. So if we've got these youngsters who are so talented, like we're talking about Jude Bellingham, you know, they're not playing in the Championship or League One, they're playing in the top five leagues in the world. We should be sending them to a tournament with the aim of winning trophies. So when they go to the senior squad, they have this experience of being in a tournament, knowing about the knockout stage or the group stages and how to manage games. I think we're doing a disservice to the age groups if we're not treating every competition like something we want to win and just a conveyor belt for whoever's managing England at that time, because then you're not creating good footballers. You're just basically holding them until the senior squad comes along and decides to give them a cap. I think that's absolutely ridiculous.
Barry, what were the books? James and the Giant Peach? Delia's How to Cook?
One was a biography of Abraham Lincoln, which was very good.
He also was a big fan of putting motivational phrases up around the training base and things like that.
Good.
And his favourite one, according to when Andy Hunter did an interview, I was looking back over the interview, his favourite one was, there's never been a better time to be an England player. And that was on the walls.
Oh, 66 was quite a good time, wasn't it? So you'd scroll underneath it. 96 was quite a good time. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two will begin with Germany's defeat to North Macedonia. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Before we do the rest of the home nations then, Germany 1, North Macedonia 2. Richard Jolly saying, Germany/West Germany have been playing World Cup qualifiers since 1934, suffered 33% of their defeats in them to North Macedonia last night. The Germany Twitter account A disappointing result, to say the least. Eljif Elmas's 85th minute winner got them probably their greatest ever win. They took the lead when Goran Pandev scored. He's only 37. Richard Jolly's, another tweet from him. Goran Pandev was playing international football before Germany won England 5 in 2001. He scored in Germany's next World Cup qualifying defeat last night. James says, should Germany have to play pre-qualifiers so the likes of North Macedonia don't have to waste their time playing them in qualifying? Dave says, so we have Germany and Republic of Ireland now in the pre-qualifiers. Getting tasty, this group. It was a very strong argument on your side, Barry, wasn't it?
No, I don't think so. And I've already said I have no problem with pre-qualifiers. I just have a problem with elite football nations arrogantly demanding them. But North Macedonia, as they are now, they changed their name in 2018, I think. Previously, they were Macedonia, but it was, you know, the same country. They've been knocking around for a long time. They famously beat Ireland 3-2 to stop us qualifying for the World Cup in 98, I think. And that was the famous, whoever is worst in Irish training had to wear a luminous bib with "I had a Macedonia" written on it in the next session. So, you know, they're not at Azerbaijan, Moldova, San Marino levels of ineptitude by any means. Germany messed up. This is their the second qualifier they've lost in about 100 years, or third. So I wouldn't read too much into it. But it was a very good result for Macedonia. I think that the team we all need to look out for in that group is Armenia, who've won 3 out of 3 and topped the group.
Yeah, it's looking like a brilliant group. I was just looking at the table there, and it's really hard to call. And obviously, the interesting thing about Germany is that Joachim Löw has announced he's going to be leaving after the Euros. So I think there's a growing swell of people who want him to leave before, perhaps, because he's, you know, it's not been the best few years for Germany at all, has it? Having been eliminated from the World Cup at the group stage.
I think it's never a good idea to announce your imminent departure. You know, just go to the Euros, do whatever you're going to do in the Euros, and then announce your departure. These long farewells never tend to end well, do they? Just thinking about Steven Gerrard and others, but he's one who springs to mind. I'm not a fan of that. I think either just do the job and then leave, announce you're leaving, or leave now.
Owen says, based on recent form, would you rather have Timo Werner or Barry up front? Natasha?
I don't even know what to say. I'm going to say Barry. He seems like he can follow instructions better than Timo can. I'll go
you
with
don't
that.
Know me at all.
I mean, it was... Hans says, is there a Trevor Sinclair-like scale for Timo Werner misses? Yeah, the Ronnie Rosenthal rank? What would we call it? The Rosenthal range,
Richter
I
scale,
think, probably.
Range.
Yeah, the Rosenthal range, I think. I don't think it's that high up on that range. I mean, you think about the ball slightly behind him and, you know, it's on his wrong foot. Rosenthal clearly has the ball under control. That's the whole point. He's there. The goal is absolutely gaping. I feel bad, Barry, because, you know, I keep saying Timo Werner's going to score buckets, and I still think he will, but it's sort of been the reverse Iheanacho that you've done, and maybe I need to sort of lay into him. It was quite a miss, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it had the look about him of someone who's utterly bereft of confidence. I mean, if you look at his numbers in isolation, he... and not at his general performances. He hasn't had a terrible maiden season in England. I think, I haven't checked, but off the top of my head, I think he has about 16 goals and quite a few assists. That's okay. But because we watch him play week in, week out, and we see some of his hideous misses, and you can see the confidence gradually seeping out of him, we probably give him more pity than he either wants or deserves. So I still think he'll come good. I don't think Frank Lampard used him properly, and I think Thomas Tuchel will get the best out of him.
Can I just ask, are all three of you smoking? Is this This is like doing a detective show in the 70s. I'm like the only square kid at school who's not lit up a fag. Or Baz, have you not lit one up yet?
I'd rather not talk about smoke.
I saw him light one. I can see the smoke.
It's Barry's fault, because once I saw him smoking, I was like, okay, cool, that gives me carte blanche.
Does that mean you won't talk to me anymore because you all go to the smoking? At my sixth form, there was a smoking hut. It was like this unknown secret world that people went in to make deals. I had no idea what happened in there.
In my school, it was called the smoking saloon.
Was it? Well, we had to go over the road.
Well, we were more or less allowed smoke in our school. They would tell your parents, but otherwise they didn't mind.
My dad was a doctor, and he brought home from work a lung in a sort of plastic, sort of encased plastic casing to say, and it was like black. Oh. I mean, do you know what? It might have been a cow pat. I don't know what it was, but it looked so grim. I was like, okay, that's me done.
Did he bring it home for dinner? Or?
No, he just brought it home and said, don't smoke. This is what happens to your lungs. And it was like this sort of black mess. It was
Doctors allowed to do that? Like just bring random body parts home?
I don't know. I mean, what do you think, he's going to get arrested? He's just sitting at home now watching cricket. He's 82, Barry.
It's...
Dobbit, you know.
You grassed him up.
I did grass him up. Sorry, Dad.
I'm wondering about the ethics of bringing somebody else's internal organs home for your son's amusement.
It was probably one used for study, wasn't it? It probably wasn't like, he didn't just like carve it out of someone passing on a trolley. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, I'll ask him. I'll see if that's not just a made up memory in my own mind. But anyway, look, thanks for letting me into the smoking hut for the rest of this podcast. Scotland 4, Faroe Islands 0. Ed, you watched this one, didn't you? Nice early goal, all finished off in the second half. Give us some hot takes on this game.
Well, hot takes. Scotland were good in the end, but it wasn't as straightforward as it sounds. 4-0. I mean, Faroe Islands are no mugs. It's a cliche, but they're not. They're really not.
Who are the mugs? Because, come on, Macedonia
aren't
the
San Marino,
mugs.
Marino.
San Marino are not mugs.
They are mugs.
Someone's got to be mugs.
San Marino have to be the mugs because they're bottom of the rankings. So if anyone's
Andorra
a mug.
Andorra are mugs.
Okay.
The Republic of Ireland are getting there.
Anyway, Ed.
So Scotland scored early. John McGinn, who else, scored the opening goal. And it was a great cross from Kieran Tierney. First of three assists that he got. But then Scotland really struggled after that, and it was only a great save from Craig Gordon that kept it level. And then he made a bit of a clanger at the start of the second half and looked like he, you know, it was a sort of Jim Leighton style drop of the ball. But luckily for him, it didn't go to an attacker, and he was able to, you know, to save his bacon. And then after that, Scotland played really well and scored three excellent goals and won comfortably. So. Yeah, I mean, I think Steve Clarke has made a massive impact there with, you know, obviously qualifying for the Euros and just some finding a good system to fit in the players that they've got. Obviously, two of the best left-backs around in Tierney and Robertson, and he's getting them playing together really well. I mean, Tierney was superb yesterday, playing nominally at the back, but obviously given licence to get forward as well. And another great move from Clark has been to get Che Adams in. He's always been a big fan of his, and scored his first goal last night with a fantastic strike when he rolled his studs over the top of the ball just before smashing it in. And it was really, really classy goal. So, yeah, looking good for Scotland. And Austria got hammered at home 4-0 by Denmark in the second half. It was 0-0 at half time. So it's given Scotland a really good opportunity there, I think, for at least second place.
Did Jim Leighton, was he the last goalkeeper to cover his eyebrows in Vaseline? Did Jim Leighton cover his eyebrows in Vaseline?
I think he did, yes, as I recall.
Is that to stop sweat? Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's to stop the sweat dripping down into your eyes.
Do you put Vaseline on your eyebrows, Natasha?
I do to shape them, but not to stop the sweat. Okay. I don't perspire. What are you on about?
you're currently not perspiring, it doesn't seem. I don't know.
No. Rip, very chilled this morning.
Yeah, so Scotland up to second in Group F. Northern Ireland 0, Bulgaria 0. Another game without a win for Ian Barraclough, Barry.
Yeah, he's. I think he's neck and neck with the his Republic of Ireland counterpart, Stephen Kenny, and I think he's 11 without a win. I was reading the reaction to this game today, and everyone seems to be writing off Northern Ireland's chances already, which I think is a bit premature. There are two games into this campaign. They've lost against Italy, which you would expect, and drawn against Bulgaria, which isn't a disaster. They were very lucky not to lose, actually, because Bailey Peacock Farrell made an absolutely outstanding save in added time to keep the Bulgarians out. But it was a game they should have won, because they dominated in pretty much every department. And Niall McGinn, who was put on, I think it came on as a second half sub, was playing in a centre forward role he's not used to, and he had a few shots but just couldn't get them on target. But they probably should have won, but I don't think a draw is the disaster that some are making it out to be. They still have to play Switzerland twice. They have Italy at home, I think, and yeah, they could turn things around.
And Bulgaria, no mugs, are they, in international?
Oh, I don't know about that, actually, to be honest. I mean,
you think they're mugs?
Well, England played them in the last one, didn't they? Obviously, you know, we thrashed them away in that horrible game in Sofia, and they were terrible. So, yeah, I'm not sure if they... Oh, I don't know if they've improved since then. They may well have done.
They're certainly more muggish than they were back in the days of Hristo Stoichkov and Trifon Ivanov. Our old late bemulleted friend with the hammer for a right foot, I think it was.
I mean, I guess you could have Northern Ireland taking on the Republic, who drew with Qatar, just so one of them could get a victory, unless, of course, they drew 0-0. We should mention Wales as well on Tuesday, beat the Czech Republic 1-0. Both teams ending up with 10 men. Daniel James header from a Gareth Bale cross. It was a brilliant cross from Gareth Bale. I know there's so much talked about Gareth Bale, but just the way he got the ball out of his feet and just gave himself that extra yard was just, and maybe just with my Spurs head on, I'm just willing him to do great things. And a vital win for them, Ed.
Yeah, it really was. I was very impressed with that, because, you know, the Czech Republic are, I think, they're quite a decent team. And England have obviously got to play them in the Euros, having lost to them in the last qualification campaign in Prague. So... yeah, well, I think Wales really needed to win this game to give themselves a chance of you know, being in the mix for this group, and had a bit of fortune with, you know, playing against 10 men for part of the game. Yeah, really important, especially, it must have been very difficult. Ryan Giggs hasn't been around for such a long time now, and it's a very strange situation for all the players. But so a lot of credit to Robert Page for getting that victory.
I was on the radio with Paul Hawksby yesterday. He was talking about the red cards and saying, you know, because neither of them were, you know, they sort of were, but they weren't. And saying there should be an amnesty, you know, this goes back to Rivaldo, really. We should blame Rivaldo. But just about players staying on their feet and just not, like, grabbing their face and yelling. But I don't know how to stop it. Like, because, you know, players are obviously always looking for an advantage. The laws are there. They want... it's an advantage if an opposition player gets sent off. But I don't know how we can organise this. I'm fully in support of this amnesty of players saying, actually, let's just crack on and play. But I don't know how to enforce the amnesty. Does anyone have an idea how you could actually do it? Unless, of course, retrospectively, you banned players for diving. Even if the foul was enough for a red card, you could say, but you still made too much of it, so... you're banned for 3 games as well. Who's with me?
I think, yeah, probably retrospective punishment is the only way to deal with it. It comes back to interpretation, doesn't it? I think that's always going to be the problem with refereeing decisions, is it's always how someone views that situation. I'm not a fan of the whole dive in and trying to get an advantage. I think there should be, you know, get a yellow card. If you've thrown yourself to the floor and the man hasn't touched you and they've reviewed the game after, then yeah, you should be punished because you were trying to cheat by the laws of the game. And surely that's bad sportsmanship, isn't it?
I suppose it also goes down to sort of pain thresholds, and players would have to claim that they have a very low pain threshold. And so what you'd have to do is you'd have to, before the season, get each player and and sort of give
torture
them,
them.
Yeah, and then you'd know Jan Bednarek's pain threshold, and you'd know that was higher, for example, than I was going to say Branislav Ivanovic, but his you presume is quite high, but you don't know.
Are you going to employ the hand over fire test? Was that what you're thinking? Is that
hand over fire, or perhaps sort of?
Or is Liam Neeson busy at the moment? he's pretty good at torturing.
God, that's quite taking it to. Get Liam out of retirement or whatever he happens to be doing, or some sort of, you know, those electric shock tests, something like that. You could televise it, and it, you know.
Who do you think would have the lowest pain threshold in the Premier League?
Jose Mourinho.
You think Jose?
Managers? Are we counting managers?
I don't think so.
Sean Dyche looks really hard, but probably you know.
Can do for entertainment. Look, it's something to work on and pitch to like Dave or Quest, isn't it? And then see if they put it on telly.
Well, they could do it pre-season each. You know, when say Sky and BT are sending their crews around to film the idents of all the different players in their different jerseys doing their different poses with arms folded or looking to the side and whatnot, and just send a member of the Spanish Inquisition along with them with a set of pliers, a drill, a hammer, and some hot pokers, cow prods,
and then say sorry Yuri Tielemans, let's just see what happens. And then we know for the rest of the season.
We're just going to tie you to this chair.
That'll do for part two. Part three will begin with a great win for Chelsea in the Women's Champions League. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Women's Champions League. Chelsea beating Wolfsburg 3-0 to reach the semi-finals in the second leg. They'd won the first leg 2-1. And they were pretty lucky in the first leg. I thought Wolfsburg created loads of chances. I was expecting much more from Wolfsburg. Emma Hayes saying, I think this probably ranks as my most favourite win in charge. I've faced that opponent so many times. I felt humiliated and lost. And I always thought they were the benchmark for women's football alongside Lyon. So it really is a proud day for English football. Pernille Harder scored a penalty. Sam Kerr got another in the first half, and Frank Kirby rounded off the win. I mean, that was a brilliant performance, Natasha, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think... It was setting a benchmark for Chelsea. They've struggled sometimes in the Champions League. Like Emma said, they've lost to Wolfsburg the last three games to Wolfsburg. So for them, it was a challenge and a pride thing. Definitely, they wanted to go out there and win. I think, you know, looking at that front three of Kerr, Harder and Kirby, it's ridiculous. They got 34 goals in the league between them, 8 Champions League goals between them. I think it's the return of Frank Kirby this season has really been crucial to Chelsea thriving in the Champions League and being top of the WSL. Obviously, she was out with pericarditis, there we go, which is an inflammation around her heart. But the lockdown worked for her. She had those 6 months to recuperate and she's come back really strong. I think it's a good sign for England as well. But I love to see an English team get far in the Champions League. So I'm really happy for Chelsea.
And I was questioning Millie Bright, not personally, but on the last pod. And Faye, you know, said, no, she's a great player. And I watched her a lot in that game and she had a really, really good game. I mean, they defensively were excellent in that game, weren't they? And who do you think's going to win the tournament?
I think Chelsea have a really good chance this season. They just seem to be, you know, when you watch a team and they always get the result, you know, it might be 0-0 to 85 minutes and they're creating chances. They've got a great manager in Emma and, you know, you see her on the pitch with them. They work hard. I think this could be their year. I'm hopeful for them, which I think would be great for women's football in this country. See another English Champions League winner because it's been a while since Arsenal won it.
I saw someone on Twitter had done a highlights package, I suppose, of just Emma Hayes shouting instructions at her players as the game is going on. And, you know, they had subtitles, so you can hear what she's saying at each time, and then it frees the action, so you can show what she's telling them all to do. And, crikey, she doesn't half micromanage them from the sideline. It's very, very Pep-esque. I mean, clearly she knows what she's doing, but I think if I was a player, I would not appreciate that level of micromanagement.
I think there's the positive and a negative to it. Sometimes we watch football and we feel like the managers aren't giving their players enough instruction. I think at least with her, you know exactly what she expects from you, exactly what she wants. You know, you should know if you're in the wrong position because she's made sure that you know what the right position is. I remember the FA Cup final when they won a few years ago, and she was 7-8 months pregnant, and she was just as animated then. This, you know, she's a winner and she's very focused. I suppose she is a lot like Pep, you know, if you want to compare her to that style of manager who wants to ensure the team knows their job. So then you've got no excuses. I think that's, in a way, that's a good management style to have.
Yeah, a lot of that clip was basically telling Pernilla Harder and Sam Kerr, you know, how to press and who to press and when to press and to keep going. I think it's just so interesting, isn't it, that even if you are at the absolute top of your game, as those two players are, if somebody yells at you to sprint, you're much more likely to do it than if nobody's yelling at you to sprint. It's a very sort of human reaction, I guess. But, you know, it proves that they do what Emma Hayes wants them to do. Chelsea will play the winner of Bayern and Rosengard in the semi-final. Bayern are 3-0 up from that game. Elsewhere, Manchester City beat Barcelona 2-1. It wasn't enough to overturn their 3-goal deficit from the first leg. Barcelona will play Lyon or PSG in that semi-final. Meanwhile, the Arsenal women's manager, Joe Montemurro, has announced he'll be leaving the club at the end of the season. An Arsenal statement said he decided to take a professional break to recharge and dedicate more time to his family. He'll leave at the end of May. Ed, the Football Forum. What is the Football Forum? And is it a cause for good within football?
Well, a very interesting question. And as you may have seen, I did an article about this week, but they've been pushing a lot of press this week. It's basically an organisation that was set up at the end of 2019, which is for players and agents, mainly agents, though, I would say. They've got an interesting set of goals. Minarola predicted that, you know, FIFA is not going to exist in 10 years' time as a result of this organisation. So it's going to be interesting to see how things develop. It pretty much has been set up as a response to the incoming new regulations on agents, which is probably going to be in January next year now. And basically, agents are going to be limited to 10% of the transfer fee from the selling club and 3% of the fee from the buying club, which is a massive restriction on what they've got now. Then there's also plenty of other things that FIFA wants to do, which is making all agents licensed and having an exam that they have to pass, making all their transactions public, all sorts of things like that. And this is not washing very well with some of the big agents. Minarola, I mentioned before, is the president. George Mendes, Jonathan Barnett, and Roger Wittmann, a very powerful German agent, are among the vice presidents. It was really quite an eye-opening chat that I had with Jonathan Barnett. And really, one of the most interesting things that he said was, you know, obviously they're preparing for a bit of a battle with FIFA in the next few months. But also, one quote which he said to me, which was really surprising, was that he said, if there are smaller countries who need our help to fight FIFA, we will put the money there, and that they'll underwrite any sort of challenge to FIFA's administration, essentially. So, I mean, FIFA insisted that they're not worried about this. It is quite a big threat, I think, because, you know, these guys are very, very powerful.
And we'd be very critical of FIFA, but those ideas seem quite sensible, don't they? Making these things public, restricting how much money agents get, because that money just goes out of the game. Obviously, it's a job. You need to earn money if you have a job, and a lot of footballers need and like having agents. I can't be critical. I have an agent. It's not George Mendes. I'm not signing for Wolves, but they seem like sensible suggestions from FIFA.
I think so. Yeah, I think that there's definitely a need for more regulations for agents, and to try and redirect some of the money that is going out of the game to them. Obviously, they wouldn't agree with that. Their argument is that FIFA doesn't understand what it is to be an agent and how they do their job, and these laws have been drawn up by people who just haven't got a clue. It's kind of heading in the right direction from FIFA's point of view, but then if you're being cynical, you could say that it's just another example of FIFA and Gianni Infantino trying to get more power and trying to, you know, really, you know, make it so that they are the real stakeholders in the game, and everybody has to dance to their tune.
I read the transcript of the chat between Mina Raiola and Jonathan Barnett. God almighty, it's just nauseating.
I read that too. Actually, Barry, I couldn't get past the intro because that was nauseating.
Well, it's just an orgy of mutual backslapping.
I think the key thing to think is, I mean, I can't believe I'm actually agreeing with FIFA. I think those suggestions are really sensible. You know, I think there needs to be a transparency in football because there's so much money and no one seems to know where the money is and who it's going to. But I think we both know FIFA and the Football Forum, as they're calling themselves, they don't really care about football. It comes across like they're just in it to make money. Because if there's a young 20-year-old footballer who doesn't have people around him that knows football and he's got an agent, that agent's taking 25% of his wages or whatever, taking advantage of him, that rule would stop that occurring. You know, we wouldn't be hearing stories about former players who are now 40 and bankrupt. You know, they're sensible suggestions. But the Football Forum, it's a power struggle, isn't it? It's like, we don't really care about football or the footballers. We just want to be more important and more in control than FIFA.
The Premier League returns. We can all rejoice. Big game of the weekend sees 9th v 7th, Arsenal v Liverpool. Well, arguably the big game of the weekend sees Leicester play Manchester City. Probably a bigger game, isn't it?
I'd say the big game of the weekend is Tottenham playing Newcastle, and quite possibly a contender for the worst game in the history of football.
Could be a classic. You never know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that this is why we love the game. It's the expectation, and I know where my expectations for this one are.
Chelsea, West Brom, Leeds, Sheffield United, Southampton, Burnley. Villa play Fulham, Manchester United, Brighton. We'll obviously talk about all of them on Monday. On to any other business. Miles says, a lot of people were suggesting, you know, Barry was saying he wouldn't wear full kit for a live show. There are some things he won't do for Football Weekly. And somebody sent us, did you see, Barry, the half and half shirt? Half and half England,
yeah.
Half England, half Republic of Ireland shirt that someone sent. Who is buying that? That's an amazing, that's a great marketing idea, isn't it? There was discussion about, you know, would you wear a full England kit if it meant Ireland qualifying for major tournaments? And you were like, absolutely not. So Miles says, what would Barry be willing to do to humiliate himself in the public eye if it meant Ireland qualifying for a major tournament? Let's find his limit and see how far it can be stretched.
But I've humiliated myself so often in the public eye, I don't really have any shame left. I'm not that bothered whether Ireland qualify for a major tournament or not. The last one that qualified for this stank the place out. It was embarrassing.
On merchandise, Atitia says, and I don't really understand what this means. I don't know if this was discussed re Football Weekly merch, but Football Weekly's non-fungible tokens. Gotta keep Football Weekly up to date with tech trends. A token of Barry railing against arrogant England fans will go for millions. Does anybody know what a non-fungible token is? Is that Bitcoin?
I mentioned this to you the other day, but I don't think we recorded it. The bit that it's about, yeah, online sort of cards that you buy.
Are these like Pokemon cards? Or am I really showing my age right now?
NBA Top Trumps is a sort of precursor to this in the Premier League, and it's going to come over to England.
Pokemon of Barry is how we're going to make money out of this.
A bit, yeah, so something like that, yeah, Pokemon of Barry. Yeah.
Producer Ian says, a non-fungible token, for all those that don't know, is a unit of data on a digital ledger called a blockchain, where each NFT can represent a unique digital item, and thus they are not interchangeable. NFTs can represent digital files such as art, audio, videos, items in video games, and other forms of creative work.
I believe there's a new game being developed, a new fantasy football game, which is based on this. Watch this space, because I might be doing an article about it soon.
All right. Barry, are you fungible or non-fungible?
So I've lost the will to live. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Okay, well then let's end the pod. It's a good time to do it. Thank you so much, Natasha, for your time.
No worries. See you later, guys.
Thank you, Ed.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
Will you have retained the will to live by Monday?
As long as we don't talk about whatever the hell that was.
Ever again.
Ever again.
I promise. Okay. This is the last time we will ever speak of anything fungible or non-fungible.
All right.
Okay. Then we'll return on Monday.